Firstly, foxes, rabbits, and then cane toads. Australia has certainly learnt its lesson with the introduced species, but now a proposal is being suggested with a more thought-out strategy and a nobler goal. That goal is to aid in the preservation of the world's rhinoceros population. One proponent of the idea is Bill Lawrence, distinguished professor and director of the Centre for Tropical Environmental and Sustainability Science at James Cook University. Welcome, Bill.
Thanks, Des.
Perhaps we can start off with a look at the vulnerability of the rhino as a species worldwide.
Yeah, well, there's actually five species of rhinos. None of them are doing well. There's two species in Africa, and there's three species in Asia. So there's a black rhino in Africa that's doing terribly. There's a white rhino that has two different subspecies, one of which was down 20 individuals about a century ago and is built back up now to about 20,000. So it's the healthiest by far. The northern subspecies of the white rhino is down to just two females. The last male died in March, so it's basically looking extinction right in the eye. And when you look at the Asian rhinos, you see more or less the same thing. The Sumatran rhinos just surviving in a few little secret pockets of place that biologists are even afraid to tell anybody about because of the poachers will get in there. The Javan rhinos down to 60 individuals living way out in the far west of Java. It's pretty much, you know, a grim and scary picture, and it's been a combination of destruction of their habitat and a lot of road building that's allowed poachers to come into many of the areas where they still survive. And then, of course, big markets in China and Vietnam for rhino horn, which is all being illegally smuggled, and where they've in traditional medicine, they think that it works as a male aphrodisiac and also to do things like cure hangovers and cancer and all different kinds of things. So it's right now rhino horn is fetching thousands of dollars for an individual horn, so it makes it very tempting for a target for a poacher.
Now, with all those associated problems that you describe, like degrading of their environment and poaching in their native countries these days, are governments taking any particular action that target those negative activities?
Yeah, the host countries are trying. I mean, it's just an uphill battle. Many of the countries where they live have got growing populations, especially in Africa, lots of poor people, lots of people with automatic weapons, limited rule of law, of course. So now places like South Africa, they've been trying all kinds of things. They've been dehorning some of the rhinos to just take the horns off of them. In other cases, they've actually had armed guards walking around, literally just kind of like armed sheep herders with the rhinos. In some other cases, they've done things like, one of the things that's interesting is they've been putting poison in the rhino powder and then letting it out into the market. So now when someone gets some rhino horn and they think it's going to be an aphrodisiac or whatever, instead of being, shall we say, more sexually proficient, they actually just get sick as a dog. So there's been all kinds of ideas that are being tried, but the bottom line is, it's still, I mean, it's an incredibly desperate situation for a lot of these species, which is why we sort of put that idea out there that maybe Australia could possibly play a role in, as a country with better governance and a lot less firearms and really not you, where you wouldn't have the poaching, but we do probably have the appropriate kinds of habitats and environments. Maybe Australia could play some kind of role in helping to conserve these desperately imperiled rhinos.
If all the pressures in their native countries would be taken off, like poaching and habitat destruction, what would be the prognosis in terms of the recovery of rhinoceros populations?
I think it would be quite good in a lot of cases. Again, we know from the southern white rhino, they were down to 20 individuals a century ago, and they're now around 20,000. So they bounced back. You know, there's been a loss of a lot of the subspecies, the different varieties of the rhinos in many cases. So a lot of their genetic and their geographical variation has disappeared, but they're still alive. And, you know, if you could safeguard them somehow, many of them probably would recover, even though they're in desperately small numbers in many cases. But That's the real issue, though, is figuring out a way to try to take the pressure off. I personally think we really need to amp up the pressure on China and Vietnam, both for consuming rhino horns to a degree to which it's creating such amazing prices, stunning prices for it, for a rhino horn powder, and also for China in particular for pushing roads in such an aggressive way, even into the last wild areas in many developing nations. And that's really the big assault on rhinos, is they just almost no place left for them to survive where they can be free from hunting and other kinds of human disturbances.
In terms of human-driven preservation efforts, how have we gone so far? And I actually mean they're not just the armed guards, but more a deeper biological intervention.
Well, there's various things that are being tried, have been tried. The zoos, you know, there are some of the better zoos around the world are quite organized in terms of trying to breed endangered species in captivities, and when you in captivity, either in zoos or wild animal parks. And in cases where you're getting down, you know, to super, super rare things, like the California condor, for instance, a magnificent bird, which is now kind of recovered, but it was down to just a few individuals in North America. Also, the black-footed ferret would be another example where there was just a handful of individuals left. They bred them back up in captivity and then re-released them back into the wild and basically saved them. So it looks like, you know, zoos and captive breeding can play a role, but I think, you know, the bottom line is we can't, that's not the ultimate answer, but we have to also conserve their native ecosystems. I mean, if we let their native environments go and be destroyed and then just hang on to the rhinos, let's say in a few zoos or parks, it's a little bit like saving a few shiny baubles from Christmas and throwing away the whole Christmas tree that supported them. So we need that whole ecosystem, that whole environment. So I don't think we should be giving up at all on trying to maintain wild populations of rhinos. Really, these kinds of suggestions have to do with more with maybe providing a buffer against extinction and perhaps trying to breed up and help to augment some of those wild populations that are just so desperately small. And I would think also for a country like Australia, where you've got such a healthy ecotourism industry, trying to actually put some money, some of that ecotourism money, back into the field. So send it back to Africa and send it to Asia. That would really be the most noble kinds of efforts, not to just try to make money here, but try to actually conserve rhinos and help with the efforts to combat the poaching and the destruction that's happening in their native places, in their native ranges.
So in terms of practical action here in Australia, how would you see things going?
Well, my understanding, there is one group called the Australian Rhino Foundation, which has been trying for a few years to bring rhinos into Australia. They currently are working on bringing, I think, about 60 white rhinos, which are the southern white rhinos, which are the one that I mentioned that's actually the least endangered one, the one that we're least worried about actually right now. But the problem is, my understanding, and I'm not an expert on this, but I understand that they've had many problems with the government, actually, that there are lots and lots of regulations and other kinds of things, limitations in Australia with, and look, it's understandable. I'm not blaming the government for this. We've had a bad history of invasive species, and so there's lots of safeguards and precautions and worries about disease and other things, but efforts to try to establish them here have run into a lot of bureaucratic hurdles, not surprisingly, and then, of course, it's expensive to bring those animals in, and I think one of the key things for me is if we're going to do something like this in Australia, and I think it's a big if, I put this out here to just sort of raise some discussion about the desperate state of rhinos, I think we don't want to be competing with those current efforts in the field, efforts in Africa and in Asia to try to slow the poaching and try to maintain their habitats. If we're going to do that, let's not compete with those existing conservation programs. It should be money that comes from Australia and is funded from here, not being a competitor with existing conservation initiatives. I don't think that that's really then becoming part of the solution. It's then becoming part of the problem.
So you'd see a case of where 60 rhinos came from overseas being set up in some sort of park. I think from your article you mentioned something like, you know, perhaps on a part of a cattle station or something like that.
Yeah, that's would be one possibility. I mean, we're certainly not talking about anybody letting rhinos run wild. That's not going to work. But, you know, there are places where obviously livestock and other things have been kept, and we've got large expanses of land. The different species of rhinos live in habitats, everything from kind of the savanna grasslands to woodlands, in some cases into dense rainforests. We pretty much got all that in Australia, and you could imagine having some of those, you know, some area set aside where you had wild rhinos or semi-wild rhinos, and probably being very attractive as an ecotourism opportunity. I mean, that's a kind of an ideal scenario. I think that that's the kind of thing that one would want to aim for if one were going to be serious about this. The devil's in the details on something like this. If it's going to be done, it needs to be done the right way. If it's not going to be done the right way, then it's probably one of those things where we're better off at least talking about the problem and getting people interested in rhinos and trying to combat the poaching and trying to combat the destruction of the habitats and the road building and other development act pressures that are causing the wilderness areas to shrink so rapidly. So, there, you know, just as an example, there's a lady, just Des is one example, there's a lady named Lynn Johnson, who's a businesswoman from Melbourne. She learned about the situation with rhinos, and she, off her own bat, raised tens of thousands of dollars to put adverts in Vietnamese newspapers and magazines, basically telling them about the poison rhino horn and saying, don't risk poisoning your rhino horn's often given as a gift, for instance, to a business associate, or sometimes it's for celebrations, you know. Don't risk poisoning and ruining your business. Don't risk poisoning your children. Don't risk, you know, a disaster. So it's basically, that's the kind of imaginative thing that I think would be, is another idea that's got potential, is to try to have education and outreach in those kinds of places. China's harder because China has a much more closed media, and China's a much more difficult place to penetrate in terms of their just general reception to some of these ideas. But Vietnam is a big market, and it's a bit easier to operate there in terms of getting the word out.